My first question will be around the rising cases of COVID-19 in on the continent and the rollout of vaccines. So, with the rise in number of COVID-19 cases and rollout of vaccines in other parts of the continent of the world, rather, where is Africa today?
So let me first of all start with what I believe is a very a positive and good move is the very strong leadership role that your Nigeria Centers for Disease Control and Prevention has the work that they have been doing to contain the pandemic in Nigeria. I think it speaks to the importance and relevance of having strong national public health institutions. I think that must be recognized. Nigeria is our most populous country on the continent with over 200 million people. It is your COVID cases are less than 150,000, which is great. All you need to do is to turn to India and Brazil and see where they are. Then we can imagine if the situation had gone out of control in Nigeria, what the situation would be. So I really doff my hat to the leadership and colleagues at the Nigeria CDC. I think that is one. The second thing is that we are, having said that, we are all experiencing a second wave, including Nigeria. And the second wave that is more aggressive than the first wave. In the first wave of this pandemic as a continent, we were recording about 18,000 cases at the peak. The peak was around July and August. And now we are recording about 32,000 cases a day as a continent. That shows you how aggressive it is. At the peak of the pandemic, again, at that same time, we were recording 500 deaths a day. And now we are recording more than 1,200 deaths a day on the continent. I think it's very important that we take notes of that. So why is this important? It tells us that a vaccine will become the game changer if we have to bring this pandemic under control. There are three sources of vaccines that you are aware of. I mean, the COVAX facility run out of Geneva is working directly with member states. Second is the AVAC, which is the African Vaccine Acquisition Task Force, which you heard last week, President Ramaphosa, as the chair of the African Union, announced that we have secured 270 million doses of vaccines, which is great. I think in the coming days, I think this is strictly privileged information to you. In the coming days, you hear supplementary announcement that will speak to the fact that we as a continent will start vaccinating our healthcare workers very, very soon. But I'll keep the details to President Ramaphosa as the chair of the African Union to make that announcement. So I think that is what I'm giving you. The excitement in me cannot allow me to not share at least some very little tips to you. So I think we have secured 270 million doses of vaccine. Is that enough to cover our continent? It's not enough. But if you add what we are going to receive from COVAX, and then what we are securing there, we are moving slowly towards our target. The stated target for our continent, which we Africa CDC, based on science, have suggested to the leadership of the continent and they agree to, is 60% of the continent vaccination, so that we strive to achieve what we call population immunity, community immunity, or herd immunity. And I think that is where we are heading to. Other countries of other parts of the world are heading towards even a more aggressive goal of about more than 70 to 80% vaccination there. But we believe that if we can achieve 60% of vaccination in 2 years, then we can really blunt this virus and deny it the ability to continue to disrupt our economies and kill many people.
Okay. Very quickly, just so naturally, now that you've spoken about the COVAX intervention, I'd like to know how the continent is paying for this intervention.
So the interventions towards or the acquisitions of vaccine through COVAX, it will be highly subsidized because it's based off pooling resources from donors, from partners to facilitate low-income and middle-income countries to have access to vaccines. I think that is one. For the vaccines that will come through our the platform, the African Union platform, they will be having those vaccines at a cost. I mean, of course, and the range there is from about $7 to $10. But the financing of this has been also worked out so that countries can get work with the Afri-Exim Bank to get into an arrangement that can facilitate them to get these vaccines and repay those the loans over a long period of time. We should remember that acquiring vaccines is not just a health issue, it's really an economic issue, an economic investment. Look at how damaging the virus has been to our economy. So the only way to relieve that and start working with making economies to work is to vaccinate as quickly as possible. So taking some grants, some loans to do that quickly so that we can bring back economies, I think it will be a very wise investment.
Okay, so just to make sure I get it correctly, the African continent is paying for the COVAX intervention, but at a very subsidized rate. Yes. I guess this is where low-income countries are getting these vaccines from COVAX for free.
Yes, I mean, the countries based on their income level, I will be getting some of these vaccines I mean, I can't really tell you what exact cost, how subsidized that would be. But that is the whole concept of COVAX. There are certain countries that are in Africa that do not qualify to because they are considered middle to high income, like South Africa, I believe, and other countries in that category. But I neglected to mention the third pathway, which countries are doing some individual acquisitions themselves. But we caution that regardless of where you go get the vaccines, but we should really make sure that you're getting safe vaccines and efficacious vaccines, because that is extremely important. Those are two non-negotiable parameters. The rest doesn't really matter. I mean, whether you get it from any source.
Okay. Beyond the COVID, COVAX intervention for vaccines, AVAT has made a move to secure 270 million vaccines, like you said. But putting together the 600 million we're getting from COVAX and the 270 million AVAT has secured, this does not come close to catering for the 1.3 billion population of Africa. How then do we fill this gap?
So that is what I'm saying. That I mean, what we should concern ourselves more now is what I call timely access, so that we start vaccinating. Remember, I've said that our target is 60%. So if COVAX gives us 600 doses of vaccines, and if each vaccine, if each individual requires two doses, that means that you can vaccinate up to about 300 million people, okay? And then we get 270 million doses of vaccines. I think you begin to build up, okay? You are slowly moving towards that. My speculation is that the market will ease up towards the second to third and fourth quarter, where the Western world would have vaccinated many people. There will be no scramble for vaccines anymore. The market will open up, and then and many more vaccines will come on. Remember, we're still talking about AstraZeneca, the Pfizer vaccine, and Moderna. Johnson & Johnson will soon be announcing the efficacy of their vaccine, and other vaccine candidates are out there. So in the coming weeks and months, we'll see that many other vaccines will be available, so that it will begin to loosen up the limitations of vaccine, and then we can move quickly. I think so the key is to get started. I mean, and if we get started, we put the systems in place to enable vaccination. I think that would take us to get us to where we are. The most important thing before I leave you on this is that we have to be prepared as Africa to be able to do something that is historic, which means the continent has never vaccinated more than 100 million people in 1 year. Never, ever. I mean, this is not childhood vaccination where people take their children and go to the, I mean, we have to vaccinate at scale. So while waiting for the vaccines to come there, we should be putting in strong programs in place to enable vaccination, large scale vaccination.
Yeah, so this gets more and more interesting as it goes on. So you've said that towards the end of the first quarter, developed countries would have vaccinated most of their population. I assume this is why the AVAT's 50 million vaccine will be coming in between April to June, right? And so my question will be, while we wait for April to June, what happens with people who get, to people who get infected? How do we make sure that we're able to hold our hands together and, you know, flatten the curve, for want of words, until the April when these vaccines will be coming in?
So, I mean, that's a very good question. The continent is better prepared today than it was 1 year ago. When 1 year ago, we knew little about this virus. 1 year ago, we didn't have the PPEs. 1 year ago, we didn't have a simple mask. Okay, even if you had the money, you probably not, I don't know where you are based, but you, I mean, if you're in Lagos or Abuja, it would not have been possible to get even masks. So we have all of those. We now know how this virus behaves. I mean, we know that if we do not, we avoid large gatherings, congregation, that we deny the virus space to spread. So the public health measures we need to continue to implement, and it is working. Okay, if you look at the pandemic in Kenya, they went through their first wave, they went through the second wave, and they are really down there. Okay, they're flattening the curve right down there. So it's many examples are out there that we've made. Second thing is that as the pandemic rages, we should be looking at care facilities, okay, like oxygen. Make sure that our hospitals are equipped with oxygen, because most people are dying because of basic supply of oxygen. We should equip that so that the people are infected, they have basic care, they have the basic care, excuse me, and that way they don't reduce mortality. By doing that, I think it would enable us to get to March and April, where we start the vaccine. Again, I want to say this very clearly. Vaccines are not going to be the magic bullet, even though they will be the game changer. Because remember, it takes us two doses of vaccines for at least for the existing vaccines for it to be to kick in. You vaccinate, say, today, the 20th of January. You have to come back 4 weeks later to get your second shot. And then, so even with vaccines, we have to keep doing the things that we know that work best. I mean, we know that masks for now is our best vaccines. Okay, masks protect. I mean, that if you wear a mask, I wear a mask, there's no transmission going on there. So masks are our best vaccines for now. So, I mean, we just have to make sure that we do it consistently and not get tired of that.
Yeah, great. So for health workers who will be the first to get vaccinated, besides being primary health givers, what is the logic behind starting vaccination with health workers across the continent?
That's the strong argument for that, because they are not just caregivers taking care of COVID patients, but they are caregivers that take care of other diseases. I mean, remember HIV, TB, malaria are still out there. I mean, many other diarrhea diseases for children. So if we allow COVID to infect many of our healthcare workers, then we run a big risk that our health systems will collapse, because they constitute the backbone for everything. I mean, and we have limited number of them. For a continent of 1.3 billion people, we have about 3 million healthcare workers. That's not a lot. So we have to protect them jealously, because if they are wiped out, then we are in big trouble.
Okay, so in the rush of production, we've seen China, vaccine production, we've seen China, we've seen India, we've seen Russia. Are there, you know, places the ACDC would advise nations to look towards or to avoid while trying to acquire vaccines for their population?
So we have developed what we call the African COVID-19 Development and Access Strategy, which you can go on our website and access that. And that is underpinned by a philosophy we are calling the Whole of Africa approach, which means let's work collectively. This is a very delicate issue. It's a very competitive area. So if we join hands together, we have a bigger say around the table. So we really encourage countries to work with Africa CDC, which we have several working groups that are working at driving this forward. I think having that whole of Africa approach will help. Second thing is, of course, that if countries choose to go silo, to really follow the guidance that we have issued on regulatory, okay, that is, how do you access a good vaccine and make sure that you don't access, because we cannot control behavior. I mean, some manufacturers will show up from country X and come to country Y and say, look, we have wonderful vaccines. If we begin to do that, then it would, and then the vaccines turn up to backfire, that means they do not work. Then you fuel the anti-vaccine movement, and it becomes very difficult. Then they begin to impact the existing vaccination programs that we have in countries, and that's not good. That's why we really want to have a coordinated approach with Africa CDC as your voice for vaccines on the continent, representing all member states. So again, just to summarize, we have the whole of Africa approach. We respect countries' sovereignty, but we say that be careful if you do a silo, watch out because it can easily backfire.
Okay. Is Africa CDC looking towards cure options? So recently we've heard of other routes like the ivermectin, which some Nigerian virologists have presented to the federal government. We've also seen cases of ivermectin usage in the US. Could we be looking towards reproposing this drug for COVID-19 cases?
Absolutely. We are looking at all options. I mean, absolutely. And the options that we are encouraging and recommending are not different from the same principles that follow vaccines. We say that show us the data, show us that the data is that the drug or intervention is efficacious. Tell us that it is safe, and we have no, and it should really be backed by science. I think all along we've strongly encouraged that the response strategy should be guided by good science and not just speculation. There's a lot of innovation on the continent, but it's also a need to be more transparent with what we are doing, so that we, and then be less of playing to sentiments, and which means John Kengasong has some concoctions, some remedies, which may or may not work, but the science of that has not been shown, and or the clinical trials, and we just expect that would jump into that. It is our responsibility as a public health agency of the continent to protect our citizens and to make sure that we are using science to drive us. So I encourage all innovations to bring the data forward. And just to say that together with WHO Afro, we established a panel of experts that can review all remedies, claims that are out there, and make sure that we are using science to make important decisions and not just speaking from emotion.
Okay, so just before we move away from the question of ivermectin, some of those drugs which scientists or experts are proposing, repurposing, have been proven time and time again to work, and they've gone through a clinical trial. Is there a need to, again, have them go through clinical trials, like you've mentioned?
But there have been, ivermectin is an old drug. I mean, and it has gone through, so you don't need to prove safety of that drug, but you need to show the efficacy of the drug for COVID-19, okay? So if the drug is working, if anybody claims that, I think that I don't need to bother about safety. Okay, that's the beauty of taking the drug off the counter and showing that. But you need to see efficacy data so that when anyone is sick, if you and I are sick with a COVID and we are ministering that, we actually know what to do. So we also need to know the dosing, because a drug may be safe, but if you administer it poorly, it becomes harmful, right? If ivermectin is effective for treating, say, onchocerciasis and whatever, for half a dose every day or three times a day, and we start administering it four times a day or whatever. So this is not because it has been shown to be effective. The dosing that it was used against that parasite, it might be very different dosing that you require to deal with a viral disease. So we still need to see that data.
Okay. So on efficacy and effectiveness of COVID-19 vaccines, are there parameters in place to bridge this gap? So it's one thing for efficacy and another for effectiveness. How then do we marry these two?
Yeah, I think the most urgent thing is that we need is efficacy. Remember, efficacy of COVID vaccines doesn't measure whether it's preventing infection. It's most of them at the end point is rather whether it's preventing disease. I think that whether a vaccine can actually stop a virus from infecting somebody is still to be known. I think that is just, and that is what, it's more urgent now to look at that. And I think the effectiveness part is secondary to what we're dealing with now. I think what you and I need to know to get the vaccine is if the vaccine efficacious. Okay.
Okay. How is the Africa CDC going to mobilize member states to address the question of local production of vaccines within the continent?
Yeah, consultations are already going on, and I'm very pleased with the extent and interest to which consultations are already underway. And there are three things that Africa CDC is encouraging and has submitted that this concept to the leadership of the African Union, and the head of states will be meeting in the coming days, actually the first week of February. Where we are saying there are four things that we need to look at to ensure that our continent is secured: strengthening national public health institutions like the Nigeria CDC, the Africa CDC, that's why I started with that. Then secondly, encouraging continental manufacturing of both diagnostics, vaccines, and drugs. And then investing in our workforce development agenda, and then partnerships, building trusted partnerships. So we already have a blueprint of what we should do post-COVID, and we are submitting that to the leadership of the continent. So and we are not waiting for any political declaration. We are already in the mode of facilitating other stakeholders to come together and begin to discuss how to move forward with the vaccine production, local production agenda at phases. You know, I mean, as we speak, we need to do a map out process. We need to develop a blueprint for that, and then of course look for the appropriate partnerships to do that, including research and development. So it's I mean, if you don't do those three things, that is invest in ability to develop diagnostics, develop vaccines and treatment, we'll continue to rely on external partners to guarantee our health security, which is really not appropriate.
Okay, so towards the end of last year, a Belgian minister put out prices for vaccine on Twitter, which later deleted. But this has become public knowledge. And so the natural question will be, what does this do? The knowledge of the prices of vaccine, what does it do for Africa's bargaining power?
Well, I am not privileged to that Belgian minister's tweet, and I think whatever he tweeted engages him. I think all we are calling for is that we should have vaccines at a very affordable price for a continent that is not rich, and we stand by that, and we continue to also encourage that there should be transfer of technology so that continental manufacturing can occur, because we still don't know for how long these vaccines will work. So in other words, if someone is vaccinated today, would he or she require another vaccination 2 years from now or 1 year from now? I think all these, what I call phase four studies and or secondary studies would tell us that. So the importance of what I'm saying is that will also determine the volume of vaccines that we'll be needing. So if we are going to be needing vaccines at scale past next year or so, then we better think of mechanisms to guarantee that the prices are extremely affordable so that we can continue to maintain appropriate vaccination levels.
Okay. What amount of knowledge or information does the continent have surrounding the various vaccines it's looking to purchase, given storage, doses, efficacy, like we've talked about, and also immunity one gets from taking these vaccines?
We have all the information that is available with the manufacturers. We have a task group that is a task force that is working on that. Our vaccine strategy, I should have highlighted, it has three pillars. One is on clinical trials. Okay, we have that. Then the second pillar is on vaccine acquisition and procurement. And then the third is on vaccine delivery. So there are scientists that are working with us, I mean, across the continent to look at, and especially the regulatory bodies. So be assured that there is no vaccine that will come through a process that will not be reviewed very, very carefully, regardless of whether they have been approved elsewhere or not.
Okay. On transportation of these vaccines, the likes of Pfizer and Moderna, they are highly demanding when it comes to, you know, storage and keeping it together. So how do we intend to do this on transportation and delivery to various parts of the continent, considering parts of the continent that are really remote and do not have access to, you know, storage facilities? How do we intend to mitigate this very huge gap?
So I will need your help. That is where I need your magazine or your journal to help us there and debunk that thinking that the minus 70 and minus 20 of all the vaccines that we know now, those are the only two vaccines that require minus 70 for Pfizer and minus 20 for Moderna. Now, we should, as I said earlier, remember that these are the very first wave of vaccines. I mean, the second wave of vaccines, the Johnson & Johnson and others will probably just require, and even AstraZeneca will require just ordinary storage there. So we should not, the narrative that unfortunately that has gone out is that these vaccines will be very difficult to administer. It's totally wrong. I mean, again, if I come to Abuja, there I can easily show you facilities that are running minus 70 degrees Celsius, okay? I mean, easily. I mean, show you many of them there. What is the cost of a minus 70? It's about $15,000, okay, to get a minus 70 degree deep freezer. So we already have airlines that are now equipped to carry vaccines at minus 20 and minus 70. Okay, so that is one. So I'm trying to trace the path of, if I have to administer a vaccination program in Abuja, what do I do? So I'll get an airline that can, Ethiopian airline already has that, Kenya and many others are carrying. So it would not be a problem for them to carry that, bring it to the airport. Once you get to the airport, you need a truck to carry it from the airport to maybe Nigeria CDC, I'm making up a story, or the Mwozu Hospital. And okay, what do? You put in a minus 70 there. So $15,000, you put in a minus 70 at that, at, say the Nigeria CDC or at the, any your central hospital there. So, and then when you take out the vaccine, the Pfizer vaccine, you can actually leave it in room temperature for a couple of days. Okay, not room temperature, so at 4 degrees for a couple of days. And for that vial, so, I mean, it has been proven to that it works there. So what will I do in Abuja? I'll put in like 10 vaccination sites, okay, which is means I train people, doctors, nurses at each site. I have a deep freezer that can hold about, say, 1 million doses of, or deep freezers that can hold minus 70. Then you have a record so that when John comes in there, there's a record that you took this vaccine and then you give an appointment when they'll come. You have enough needles, alcohols, and cotton swabs to wipe. I mean, that's it. You have your vaccination site. Then you work with the population. You tell the population where these vaccination sites are and what they should do to get to the vaccination site there, so that the population is with you. You carry them along and they go to the vaccination site, not different from what we do with the polling stations there. You do similarly in Lagos, okay, put in vaccination site there. I'm not saying you should start in the interior. Remember that more than 60 to 70% of your infections for COVID are around Lagos and Abuja, right? So why would you start in the interior remote area there? So if we do this, you start vaccinating in Abuja and Lagos, and then by the second quarter of this year, say in 2-3 months, other vaccines will come in that will not require those minors, just stringent conditions. You can take them to a different part of the, I mean, you can take them to Enugu or to other parts. But at the same time, anyone from Benin City, from Zaire, can go to Lagos or Abuja at the vaccination centers and get their vaccines. So I think we should really debunk this thing that says that we are not ready. I just gave an interview in Jeune Afrique and then the Africa Reporter, which I said, the headline is, I say that vaccines, we can vaccinate. Of course we can vaccinate. So, I mean, you and I can put up 3 vaccination centers in Abuja or Lagos, like before the end of the week. If we give me $100,000, I'll be able to do that. I buy a deep freezer. And if they don't have a backup generator, I buy a small generator there and back it up and train people, and we are ready to go.
Okay. So when this pandemic started, there were several projections on how Africa will be worst hit by the virus. Our reality today is different. Is there a scientific explanation to this?
Sorry, the line dropped a little bit.
Okay, so I asked, at the start of the pandemic, there are several projections that Africa will be worst hit by this virus. Our reality today is different. Is there a scientific explanation to this?
So our reality was different. The second wave is telling us that we truly don't yet know where we are heading with this. Okay, that's why the discussion on vaccine is so important. So there are so many things that we just published a paper in Science, which we call the puzzle of COVID-19 in Africa, which I'll refer you to, which we list so many things. We say, well, one possibility is that so many people have been infected, but we just didn't count everybody, okay? Because some serologic studies are pointing to that direction, that many more people have been exposed. I mean, second thing is that our young people, I mean, we, our population is really young. I mean, 70% of our population is less than 30 years old. Our median age is about 20 years, and many people are infected, but they are symptomatic and they are recovering there. So I think all of that has worked in our favor, which is compared to Europe, where the median age is around 43 years and many, many old people. In most populations in our countries, in Africa, there are people more than 65 years old ranges between 3.5 to 5%. So I think that is an important factor in that. And there are unknowns. I mean, there are certain things that we truly don't know about the host genetics. If the host genetics is playing a role in all of this, or any background immunity. Those are all areas that with time research will tell us there. But at least that is what we know for now, and then what we don't know.
Does testing have a place in this?
Of course. I mean, as I said, I started off with testing that, I mean, it is all possible that many people have been infected and we have not been able to test enough. But I want to assure anyone that I think our testing has improved, because I think our mindsets got locked into January of last year and February, where we're scrambling to have tests. I mean, many countries are testing now around the area that they should be. I mean, some countries are struggling, but majority of countries are beginning to test as much as they can.
Okay, it's quite understandable why the continent's attention at the moment is on COVID-19. But we are well aware that there are other infectious diseases that are peculiar to Africa and troubles the continent more, the likes of Ebola, malaria, and other diseases. Why should we be concerned?
We should be concerned because, as you rightly said, those diseases are still there. It's not because you have COVID that HIV, TB, malaria have disappeared, far from that. And we should also remember that a combination of infections with HIV, TB, and malaria usually kills about 1.2 million Africans a year. And that is a fact. We should remember that a lot of efforts have gone into those programs in terms of investment in control of HIV, TB, malaria, and that many more deaths may occur on the continent, not from COVID-19, but due to COVID-19, okay? Just because people are sick, they can't get attention. As you and I discussed, healthcare workers may be in short supply now, people may die from cardiovascular and things that could have been prevented. So that's why when we designed our continental strategy, we had three pillars. Pillar one was prevent infections, pillar two was to prevent deaths, and pillar three was to prevent harm. The harm here was both social harm, economic harm, and harm on other diseases.
Okay. Thank you so much, Dr. Nkengasen. Do you have last words?
Well, the last words I have is that vaccines will be here. The Africa CDC and the African Union is working very hard, of course, together with WHO to bring vaccines. These vaccines are safe. They are efficacious. I will be the first person to get my vaccine. Once they arrive, I will not be ahead of the curve, I'm sure. But when my turn arrives, I will take the vaccines without consideration. So I really urge all the population to cooperate and work closely with respected public health agencies like Nigeria CDC to guide them on how to get these vaccines and trust on them. So that would be my parting word.